Dad Bod Rap Pod, the rap nerd industrial complex, is back.
I do have a complex.
Yes. My name is Dim One, Struggle Rap Artur. I like to think of myself as the point guard of the team. Like, absolutely. You know what I mean?
Nice.
It's not about my shot. I'm here to create for others. I am joined by shooting guard, who had the beard before Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson got his beard idea from Mr. Nate LeBlanc. How's it going?
Good. Hopefully by the time you guys hear this, Klay's shooting percentage from three will have rebounded.
Oh, yeah.
Pun intended. Yeah. He's shooting terribly to start the season, but he had a nasty dunk last night. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
No, in the fourth quarter. Klay always does these, what I call Klay ups. It's like he's 6'7", he can fully dunk, but he usually does a little finger roll or just puts it off the glass. He's so technically like sound. Right. Last night he fucking threw it down. It was awesome.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out. Also joined by small forward, the LeBron James of our team. He has red wine to boot. It is Mr. David Ma.
Hey, guys. Good to be here. Setting screens all over the place.
That's
my move in life.
Dave sets what I can affectionately refer to as butt screens when we play basketball. He just kind of like pops it out a little bit, and nobody wants to touch that, so they just like stop.
Twerk screens.
He's freed me from many a J on that.
Okay.
That works with the ladies, too.
Yay!
Nobody's trying to touch that.
Teamwork makes the dream work here with the dad bods. We've definitely been getting into a basketball bag, and I apologize because I think, like, if you're in the UK or some shit like that, does any of this make sense to you?
Right.
Does basketball resonate? Because to me, basketball is life. Like, I don't know what the fuck we were doing the whole time the NBA was gone.
Oh, tracking free agency and rumors.
Yeah.
Just like reading. Yeah. I have a Twitter list called Ball is Life.
Okay.
And that's where I put all the sports writers and all the like little NBA Twitter figures. So if I just want to read about basketball, I have like tons of content for myself. And the season hardly ever stops. There's a few weeks in August where like Zach Lowe doesn't do a podcast.
Right. Like, Woj doesn't have a tip for us. But it's this interesting crossover of the NBA and rap to stay on brand here. Did you guys catch LeBron James's The Shop?
I didn't watch the whole thing. I feel like I heard so much about it that I know what happened, but I didn't actually watch it. Did you watch it?
I watched a clip because I can't afford HBO. Please sponsor the podcast in season 2. But so
$16 a month. That's all we need.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I mean, I saw the clip of him and Drake talking in, and by the time this breaks, that will be dead news, thankfully. But there's this interesting part where LeBron calls himself a hip hop historian.
Right.
And Drake says he studies rap battles for a living.
Right.
Yeah, where I'm like, what have I been
both
doing
were
with
questionable.
My life?
Both are questionable.
Both questionable. 15-yard penalty. Here's the thing, though. When LeBron comes through and calls himself a hip-hop historian, who's going to tell him?
Right.
Yeah, he said it in that way that people who are used to like saying whatever the fuck they want, and everybody going, yeah, Bron, you are a hip-hop historian.
Probably mostly you play basketball. Maybe this is like a side thing, the whole history you're writing about rap.
You know what,
Are you just a hardcore listener of hip-hop?
Right, just say you're a fan, right?
Yeah, a big fan.
Big fan, huge fan.
he's definitely a big fan. I called his taste into question, though, because he was really big on Eminem's Kamikaze record.
I do remember that.
Out the gate. And I go, oh, Bronny, why?
Isn't it like when you get famous and you know other famous people, though, you always have to big up the new project? Like,
okay.
Everyone's friends, right? You can't be like, I used to like Eminem, because then it's like the front page of the news is like, LeBron disses Eminem.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. No, totally.
He had some like tweet about like, this is real lyricism or something. So what I like is that he intimates
it's not
to
not
be hip hop.
It's gotten so old. I don't know if you guys have seen the comic book film Venom. I have.
Of course.
The credits scene is an Eminem song called Venom. Mm-hmm. And it's so bad that when I'm sitting in my chair waiting for the credits to roll so I can see the post-credits scenes, Lucia and I were both laughing.
Okay.
It sounds like a parody Eminem song.
Oh, man.
Like
it's unintentional comedy.
Like that clip? That
yes. Totally.
Oh, man. Okay. Okay, well, speaking of Venom, shout out to Traxamillion, whose song Super Hyphy got placed in in the movie.
That's awesome.
Not laughable.
Like, it's pretty. It's a pretty San Francisco movie. Like they're is like it? When they're you know like in I don't know if you guys are nerds like this, but in movie chase scenes, mm-hmm. if you know the city, often the geography doesn't make sense.
Okay. Okay.
Like in Bullet, which is the most famous chase scene in San Francisco with Steve McQueen. Right. He's right, driving all over the city and jumping off different hills onto and landing in other parts of the neighborhood. In Venom, it was pretty good. They're making these loops through like Financial District, North Beach, Chinatown.
Okay, that's cool.
That would actually make sense. You couldn't actually drive on those streets because they're always so crowded. But if it was in the middle of the night, you could technically, you know, you guys know those.
Little Tommy's Joint shout out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah,
they run down any gentrifiers? No?
Gentros?
Gentros?
That's your new term, dude. I
didn't invent it, but it's part of our Bay Area 2018 lore. So like LeBron, we are hip hop historians, very deeply invested in the culture, and we have a guest today who is really when I think of like lyricism in the classical sense of lyricism, his name comes to mind, and this is Elzai, formerly of Slum Village. He's got a new project out called Jericho Jackson.
Yes.
With Crisis from Little Brother Camp. So he was kind enough to chop it up with us both about his kind of history with Slum Village and working with J Dilla, as well as
just Detroit in general.
Just Detroit a little bit in general.
When Detroit was bubbling, you know what I mean?
Oh, man, what a time to think about being, you know, they talk about the hip hop shop is this place where all these folks come together. And there's been.
It's like their New Eurekan Poets Cafe kind of thing.
Totally. Right.
I can only imagine.
Their like, Cafecito.
Oh, nice. San Jose reference. But he was really cool. Talked to us about kind of his whole history and his new stuff coming out. So please tune in, check out our interview with Elzai. Dead Bod Rap Pod, flyest MCs in the game, always coming through to our show. We have none other than Elzai. You know him from his work with Slum Village as well as his Elmatic project, and he's got some new stuff coming on. Elzai, thank you for joining us on the program.
All right, man. Thanks for having me, brothers.
So if we could maybe just kind of starting back, could you talk to us a little bit about how you kind of got connected with JD? I know you were working with House Shoes for a while in the beginning, and how'd you end up getting connected with JD and kind of getting into the Slum Village universe?
I knew JD from like the open mic scene. We used to be at this clothing store that used to turn into an open mic on Saturdays from like 4 to 6 called the Hip Hop Shop. And, myself was up there, as well as, you know, Proof, Eminem, mm-hmm. Fat Cat, Guilty Simpson been in there, Royce da 5'9", and Slum Village was there. Mm. And so I knew J Dilla just as much as I knew, like, T3 and Botan at the time. And the first J Dilla track that I ever rapped to was a track that Proof was putting together with me, him and Bizarre over J Dilla track. And then from there, I had got a track from J Dilla, which ended up being the Dreamy Eyes remix for like D'Angelo's, one of D'Angelo's songs or whatever. And he knew me from rapping on the open mic scene. I knew him from doing this thing. I seen him come up from like doing remixes or songs like for Far Side, Little Indian. We just kind of knew each other from the scene pretty much.
What was it like working with him in studio to hear, you know, some of the stories about Slum Village sessions? Like what was his, how does it, his approach maybe differ from other producers you work with?
He was the first person I ever seen make a beat like in 5 minutes. but it was like he already had it mapped out like, not to say that it was like premeditated, but it was almost kind of like, you know, he had like made a drum line, and it was almost kind of like he was thinking in his head to what records that he should, you know, use. Because Dilla used to, one thing Dilla did that I feel like a lot of producers don't do is that he'll listen to the whole record. Mm. Like, he'll listen to everything on a record, like, while he cleaning up, while he just chilling, smoking, or whatever. It'll be in the background doing conversations. So I feel like, you know, watching him make a beat in 5 minutes is almost kind of like him recalling the song or the placement in a song, where it's like, okay, I could take that right there and I could put that right there, and then it's another record right here. And it's like he almost knew all the changes in a record, or the actual record, like he committed to memory to actually put it together, like in 5 minutes. But yeah, the sessions was dope, man. I mean, it was always live. It always was a vibe there. It was a lot of weed smoke, a lot of talking about hip hop or whatever, but it was dope. It was definitely a vibe.
Right on. Before we kind of get into your solo catalog and your new project, Jericho Jackson, just generally, do you consider yourself to be more of a producer or an MC?
MC, but I mean, if you were to ask me, well, I consider myself to be more of a scientist than anything.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. But yeah. If we talk about producer MC, yeah, definitely MC. I mean, I hear music in a different way. You know, I got synesthesia, so it's like, you know, I see colors like when I hear the music. So that makes me, you know, pick certain beats over other beats or whatever, or, you know, that gives me a certain like idea of what kind of track I want to, or a direction I want to approach. But I would say more of an MC.
Okay. Thank you, man. Thank you. I want to jump around just a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about Elmatic, because I feel like some younger cats probably first heard of you through that. I want to talk a bit about Illmatic and when you first heard it and how it struck you.
I heard Illmatic the day that it came out. I was with my man Fess Rock, and we used to always go to his basement to check out new releases. And so, you know, it was one of those things. Like, I was up on Nas back during the Zebrahead soundtrack, when he put Halftime on the Zebrahead soundtrack, and it was a connection there because they actually filmed pieces of Zebrahead in my high school at the time. I went to Cody High School, and it's pieces of Cody High School and Zebrahead. But I knew Nas from Live at the Barbecue, so I was a fan from, like, you know, the Breaking Adams, Nas, to the Halftime, and to the It Ain't Hard to Tell, and into the album. I just thought it was life changing in terms of, you know, these incredible producers coming together and, you know, getting behind an artist that they can believe in, and the artist actually becoming like the voice of the future, because the way that he wrote was like so poetic and so visual that I hadn't heard nothing like that from any artist up until that point.
Did you ever hear from Nas or his people, or just a response to your album?
I haven't, you know what I'm saying? But I have had I've had stories of people who actually had ran into Nas, and Nas put them up on the project.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I personally had never, like, you know, ran into him or whatever.
Interesting. So. Yeah, it's an incredible homage, so.
Oh, word. Good looking. I appreciate it. I mean, that's what it is, like, and I don't even take credit for it. Like, I got the idea from DJ House Shoes.
Okay.
So DJ House Shoes, we was on tour one day overseas, and we was just kind of chilling on an off day. And he was like, man, you know, it'd be dope if you redid Illmatic, we called it Elmatic. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. You know what I'm saying? I'm down with that. So I went with that idea and I ran with it. And it was my idea to actually get a live band instead of like, you know, rapping to the regular instrumentals. But House Shoes is the originator of the idea.
Okay,
that's
word.
Dope. That's dope. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about just the Detroit scene? Like it seemed to have birthed so many, maybe the Detroit rapper scene. Like it seems to have birthed so many spitters with this particular approach to the craftsmanship. What is it about Detroit that makes you guys so, you know, intensely focused on lyricism and lyrics?
Oh man, I think it's because we didn't really have any major labels where we were from. You know, there's a lot of independent record labels, but no major labels. And at the time when we was doing our thing, we felt like Detroit wasn't being heard, almost kind of like the South.
Right.
You know, so we felt like we had to put 110% into the craft just to get heard, you know, just to get our foot through the door, just to, you know, get somebody to listen to our demo tapes or whatever. We actually used to dub ourselves the Last Ones Out. Like we, it was a crew called the Last Ones Out, but we all kind of like took on that name because we felt like, you know, we're probably going to be the last ones out to actually do our thing. So that's why I feel we took the craft very seriously.
Would you say that Detroit gets its proper due even right now?
I think so. I mean, okay. I hear people saying a lot it's between Philly and Detroit, in terms of like the most deadly MCs.
Yeah.
Definitely I feel like that. I mean, you know, with Jay Dilla like opening up the door, you know, on a production side, and like Eminem busting his way through when he came through with his first album with Dr. Dre, I feel like people started really taking notice to what the city had to offer.
Was Eminem around when you guys were kind of in the come up days, or did he just kind of appear out of nowhere?
Eminem came. He came to the shop, but he was brought onto the scene by Proof. You know, Proof was like the mayor of the city. Like, I mean, he was right. The guy that brought like, you know, the hip hop heads and street cats and like everybody in between together in like one room, and he connected everybody to where everybody started working together. I remember him calling me up, and now that I think about it, he might have called up a few people, but I remember him calling me up and having Eminem rap on the phone for me before he actually brought him to the scene. Mm-hmm. And so he brought Eminem to the scene, and I think after Eminem got on the scene and you heard the Infinite album, and then, you know, the rest is history.
Cool. Let's talk about your latest project, Jericho Jackson with Crisis. How did that come together?
Well, me and Crisis, we knew each other like from way back, like when Crisis actually like engineered my session with Little Brother when I was on the record of Hiding Place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
From the Minstrel Show. And then from there, they had a tour that stopped through Michigan, and, you know, me and Crisis hung out, we exchanged numbers, and from that day on forward, we was cool. So we were always talking about doing a record together, but, you know, life got in the way, you know, on his end, on my end, and so it just never happened. And then, you know, the stars aligned, and, you know, the right time presented itself, and so we just went for it.
Right on.
Hey, man, well, we just touched on your recent project, the Jericho Jackson, but I want to go back real quick. One of your first songs was off of Dilla's Welcome to Detroit. What do you remember as a young MC putting that one together?
I remember T3 managing me at the time. You know, I was working with YG, and me and YG probably had like maybe like 6 or 7 songs that we had recorded, And I guess YG played him for T3, and T3 was looking for somebody to manage. Mm-hmm. And so so from there we had a meeting, because I guess he liked the material he heard. Mm. And so, yeah, Dilla was doing a Welcome to Detroit album, and he was kind of like trying to reach out to everybody. And I guess through T3, he was able to get at me. And so I remember recording a drum line that T3 made, just like some generic drum line. It had no bass line or anything. Huh. And I just remember recording to that drum line, and we sending that off to Dilla, and Dilla, like, you know, made his own drum line and created the beat around my vocals.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So yeah. And I didn't even really get a chance to hear it like that. Matter of fact, I didn't even want to hear it, because it was stuff like kind of leaking out here and there. Mm-hmm. But I didn't even want to hear it until I heard the whole project in its entirety. So okay. That was my, you know, it was my first time listening. Well, actually, we heard the project way before anybody else did. But when we had all the songs, that's when I decided to hear it. But that's what I remember.
That's dope. So who are you checking for these days? Like, you're kind of a veteran MC in the game. Like, who moves you right now in terms of MCs?
Oh, man. What would I say? Let me see my man name. I think his name is, I don't want to mess his name up. Hold on one second. Hold on. What's my man name? JR. Is it a?
JRD?
Hold on, my bad. Well, hold on. It's Cat from Philly. Miles, don't bring it. Cat, I mean, you know, like, okay. Yeah. Let's see, man, because I'm, you know, it's like new MCs coming out the woodworks every day, you know.
Yeah,
so
for
a
real.
Lot of the
for real.
So a lot of the cats is starting to become, you know, they starting to be a little seasoned. But you know, I dig what Kendrick do. I dig what J. Cole do. I like I like my man Isaac Rashad. I like what he does. Man, it's like I'm drawing a blank. It's just so many MCs. You know, that's what it is. It's like the game is, I mean, it's kind of good and bad how saturated the game is. Super, you know what I'm saturated. Saying? It's like, man, it seems like every week a new person is coming out, and is winners.
How do you differentiate yourself? So you did the Kickstarter thing. You raised almost 40K for your album. Like, what, how do you stand out when you're right? There's like a million MCs coming out every minute.
I'm in constant competition with myself. You know, so I don't really look at other artists as much as I respect other artists. It's not about that, but I don't really see myself as being in competition with them. It's like I stay in my own lane, and I'm more about the science of it. You know, I'm more about the I'm more about taking words and making you visualize what I'm saying, or the technical side of it, and mixing that with the feel of a record, or the different pockets I could slide into. Me listening to what the music is saying and giving in to what a track is telling me to do, so that I'm not fighting against it, or right. I'm going with it. So it's more like, you know, so sometimes like the over the top part of me would take a back seat to certain tracks. You know what I'm saying? Depending on what it is, like almost kind of like the Benita Applebaum effect. Like, like that's one of my favorite songs ever.
Right.
And you know, my friend who knows me, my friend Paige Kennedy, is like, man, how's that your favorite song? Because you so into lyrics and all that. But it's, you know, I never like to get in the way of a vibe.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like, you know, Tip understood for a track like that to like take the back seat so that, you know, the song could be immortalized.
Did you did you learn that through the Slum Village experience? Because as a big SV fan, I would marvel at the fact that you could just get in a pocket and kind of ride things when I know you could literally body the whole track. But it seemed like, especially in that context, you were able to lay back. Is that something you picked up during that period?
Definitely. You know, because naturally, I'm more of an MC, like a, you know, I come from like the battle era. You know what I'm saying? We used to stand on top of like lunch tables and battle each other in the cafeteria, or like, you know, we'll battle each other like on the curb, like, you know, just in a cipher or whatever, or like in a open mic area. So I'm more like an MC, like Eminem, like a Royce. But when I got with Slum, they just showed me a new way to hit the beat and be more of like an instrument. So I consider myself to be the best of both worlds.
Okay. Speaking of which, Jericho Jackson is out right now. How can the people connect with you?
They can get at me through social media, the Twitters, the, you know, Instagrams, the Facebooks, Elzhi. And yeah, I'm on those platforms. Also got a website, elzhi.com. So
okay,
but they can really holler at me on Instagram and Twitter.
There it is. Well, hey, we appreciate you coming on, man. You know, we'll definitely be bigging up the project. And yeah, thanks again.
Oh, good looking. Oh, that's it. It was painless. Okay.
Appreciate it, man.
What up? Appreciate y'all, man.
All right, so that was our interview with Elzhi, as Nate pointed out, super producer from Detroit.
I did my research, I swear.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool interview. I like that he broke down his favorite joint is Bonita Applebaum, which is, for kind of a wordy lyricist guy, that was a very interesting revelation. But we're on a whole Detroit theme. We just talked to Elzhi, and we're going to do yet another Slept On Gems. We're really into Slept On Gems and geography.
Yes.
That's what I'm taking from this. Season 2, we're going to be hurting for cities. But but yeah, Detroit, man. So as we were doing kind of the back channel discussion about what this episode could be, I was... shocked is the wrong word. A little interested to find out that Dave and Nate think they don't fuck with Detroit.
Oh.
Why?
I wouldn't say don't fuck with. I if anything, it's from my own ignorance. It's like, oh, that guy's from Detroit? He's all right. I'm just saying.
I would also like to point out, we like a lot of other stuff, but I don't have my guy from Detroit. Like,
right.
Usually my way I research a city is I get obsessed with someone and then I read the liner
guy?
Notes and go like into their world. So like, I don't like Eminem that much. So he's not my guy.
Right.
I'm not a J Dilla guy. So he's not my guy. I'm probably my favorite Detroit rapper is Danny Brown, and he came out in the late 2000s.
Totally.
So I just never really, like, I don't have anyone I'm obsessed with.
You don't have anyone you're obsessed with from Detroit. All right.
Or that many MCs that I like that much.
Yeah,
As I'm doing my research. And the ones, the kind of guys I do like, including one I'm going to do a song from here, all left.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know if we're being strict, you know, geographical. All
totally,
our favorite
totally.
Rappers end up in L.A., regardless.
Right.
I don't think it makes them LA rappers, but
right. Well, that's the thing.
That's true.
Let's talk about it. Like the one guy I was like really strongly considering was Quelle Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He's born in Detroit, but I don't think of him as a Detroit rapper. Like he's certainly not like a Proof or a
but see that
something along those lines.
Yeah, I saw you posted that comment, but then I was like, I don't know. When you introduced me to dude and the song Superfuck in particular, I'm sorry if that's the song you're going to pick.
No, it's not.
Is
I'm not doing him.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very defiant there.
Because of this, but I'm, well, you know, but we're talking about
with Quell Chris, when I first heard him, I go, yeah, oh yeah, he's Detroit. Like his whole, yeah, Superfuck is very, in a good way. This is not a criticism. Very reminiscent to Jay Dilla's Shake It Down, and especially how they say the chorus. It's very, and there's a Detroit way. There's a couple Detroit ways. There's the Detroit kind of wordy battle,
okay.
Royce 5'9", Eminem, right. Proof kind of vibe that they have. And then there's kind of these other guys, which is more kind of an offshoot of the beat scene. And El's Eye is kind of in the middle there, where they get in there and they ride the beat in a particular way. Slum Village were like the gods of getting inside of a beat and just riding it. And that's what I first picked up from Quell Chris. So to me, he has a Detroit essence.
That's interesting.
In the same way that, you know, maybe a Bay rapper that moves to LA would still have a Bay essence or whatever.
Interesting.
So it is interesting. Now, just to try to be contrarian on y'all, I did look at the list and I'm kind of like, all right, there's not a guy. So if you're talking about like a guy,
sure.
I have to respect Marshall Mathers' run in the game just as a rapper.
Of course,
I have to go,
of course,
he's, yeah, an incredible rapper, yeah, who I hate listening to.
Coming up next,
I'll tell you guys a little story. Today I came home from work because I have to clean up the house when you guys are coming over, even though you probably couldn't tell. My Name Is came on the radio and I was driving back, and instead of like turning it up at the light, I turned it down. Like, I don't want anyone seeing a grown man riding around listening to Hi, My Name
but,
Is.
Hey, I'll tell you That's this, though. Hilarious. In racial profiling, if there's, I think, three artists that you will hear blasting out of people's cars whenever you're driving around. One is Mac Dre. We're here in the Bay, obviously.
Sure.
Two is Parliament Funkadelic if you're riding a motorcycle. Off top.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
He rides by my office too.
I'm like, bro, knee deep is just wafting through the atmosphere. Oh, it's
I'm not up for
biker.
The downstroke right, yeah, now. I'm trying to do a spreadsheet.
That's
and then, yeah, then Eminem is the top white guy blasting out of the car music, which is interesting because his music is so not blastable. Like it is music actually that sounds better if you turn it down. I think you've stumbled on
the Dre productions are super thick, right. But the later stuff, it's like all tinny blasting.
Totally. Or when he starts yelling and kind of gets all like raga on it. It's
totally.
Like, come on, dude.
Mero's impression of him just is so pitch perfect. And but with that said, you know, big fixture in the game and one of the veins of kind of Detroit's lyrical legacy, if you will.
For sure. I mean, they made a movie about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
About, that helps put a scene on the map
a city
in a way
of
that's
400,000 black people, and the one movie we get is Eminem. But Detroit,
like
but Detroit as a geography and as a like a city, have you guys been?
No.
I've never been.
I went 2 years ago, and I think the experience that I had that was like, oh shit, I'm in Detroit, was a cat came around the corner, speaking of bumping things, old dude in a straight ridiculously long Cadillac pulled around the corner super slow, bumping John Coltrane's Giant Steps.
Wow.
Whoa.
And
that sounds dope
in such a way that I was like tear
totally when,
yeah
but you just started walking taking super, yeah, long steps.
Yeah, no, so
that's so cool. That would never happen here.
Totally.
Ever. In a thousand years. But that's Detroit. The singer in the hotel bar was doper than anyone I had seen,
right,
you know, out here in years. So there's definitely a musical legacy.
Of course.
I think about Detroit almost more as like beats and rhymes. So I agree with y'all if we're looking for like a particular person.
Yeah.
I keep going back to, oh well, that's production. Okay, we're not just talking,
yeah,
about rappers.
Right.
So with that being said, we all you guys dug super deep. they were trying to bring MC Breed into the conversation,
right?
Which
close.
It's like
I would also have to find out like the slept on MC Breed songs.
Totally.
You can't do featuring.
Oh
your
right.
Own,
well,
right.
No, gotta, you know, get mine featuring Tupac.
Yeah, no, that's a good,
yeah,
song.
Yeah,
no,
that's a good one.
Excellent.
I probably like 5 MC Breed songs.
Yeah, he had 6. So yeah.
I'm not doing too bad.
There you go. But he was from Flint, but from Detroit proper, Nate LeBlanc. Who give us your one of your slept ons?
All right. I found this interesting that it was not higher in the having been listened to rankings for Danny Brown. This is a little snippet of Greatest Rapper Ever. My homie, a magician with the tech. Make the chain disappear and reappear on his neck. I ain't tricking with your hoes, but shit don't act. The only thing I give a bitch a fucking orgasm. I throw you in the river. This is the song that made me fall in love with Danny Brown. Mm. I was just like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, uh-huh. It's like that helium voice and like the such a brash delivery. And then you see him and he looks crazy. And like the people discovering Danny Brown, and I'm sure I was late to it, certainly later than someone who lives in that area. Mm. I was just like, this guy's amazing.
Yeah.
And he's gone on to have an interesting career. I haven't totally loved everything he put out. Maybe a bit of a, you know, that too easy on him there, but
yeah,
it's okay.
I think he started off very strong.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, the stuff he did with Black Milk, when you go back and visit it, it's not as jarring as it's, you know, as his later stuff when his voice is just banging off the walls.
Totally.
You know? So
and he really like was like instant rock star status.
Right.
It's just like people really took to him, and he's like, you know, like.
Well, he's like a Vice darling for a second.
That's
so
the
it's
kind
like one of
thing.
Those,
it's like you get sucked into that world, and that's much less about like rapping and lyrics than
most
of the rap that I tend to listen to.
Just a degenerate in general.
Totally.
Yeah. It became more
general.
It was more like personality rap at a certain point. You know what I mean?
Totally. But I do think he is a good rapper, and he can certainly rap. And
top
I just,
five
I've
nasal.
Really
top five
that
nasal
song.
Rappers.
Oh, totally.
He's on the list.
Yeah. The video for Grown Up and the song is just amazing.
Totally.
I'm a big fan of that.
I thought for sure you would pick that when
I know,
we were going
I was
going to
go
that's
like...
That's a cut for you for
totally.
Sure.
Totally. I was just feeling it was a bit
and,
too
and
easy.
That's his most like backpack rap song. Like,
yeah.
It's like a nice, pleasant beat, and
totally.
It's a cool story, and the video is amazing.
Totally, totally.
But yeah, for Greatest Rapper Ever, it was like early days for him, and he's just rapping hard. It's like it's that you're hungry kind of thing. It's
Richard,
like you
Twitch
need to rap your way out of your circumstances.
Right.
And like
Detroit thing.
That's
yeah.
always going to be someone's best work, right? Or
intensity.
At least their
100%.
Most intense kind 100%. Of kind of work. So you know that's my cut. How about you?
Nice. I picked Binary Star from their album Masters of the Universe. The track that I want to highlight, it's called Reality Check. Yo. This is how I represent. I rock the mic 110%. It's intimate. I keep the party moving like an immigrant. Binary Star, superstar. It's no coincidence. Every verse is intricate. This ain't a circus in a tent. And dude, I love these guys. One Man Army goes by One Below. Actually, I saw them in Bay Area. I forgot exactly where it was, but I was somewhere in San Francisco. Trying to buy a CD, and he walks up and he goes, hey, don't even pay for that. Don't even pay for that. Here, just take my shit. Just thanks for listening.
Wow. For real?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So it was like in that era where, you know, you could see Mystic Journeyman like slanging shit. So it was one of those, and
that's
he was
cool.
heavily into that. Yeah. So big fan of the song, love the production, and I just re-listened to the album, and I think it aged pretty well. I mean, it's just good boom bap and great, you know, great rhymes.
He can really rhyme.
Totally, yeah. Totally. So,
is there another guy?
Yeah, there's another guy. Can't remember his name.
Good old what's his name? He's Binary. He's Star.
But there's like 6-7 good cuts on that album.
Yeah, I used to bump that pretty hard. He's definitely a good rapper.
Yeah, I think
we don't know if he's from Detroit though.
Oh, are we not sure? Oh, we're not sure.
No, I'm pretty
Oregon.
Sure he's from. I mean, he's from Michigan, but
all right.
Well,
the other guy is Sanam Silla, is what he goes
by. Oh,
okay.
that's what he goes
by.
Yeah. Yes.
No, I'm sure Detroit is a launching pad, right?
Right.
Like, yeah.
It's the big city.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're not like the best rapper in Ypsilanti.
I held the title for 3 years.
I don't know that many obscure Michigan towns.
I know.
No, that was good.
That was a good one.
Way to pull
I don't
that
get
out.
How it's two different things. Like
what?
How they're not connected, like the peninsula and like the
well, there's a bunch
I'm
of fucking
it...
lakes, man.
Yeah.
There's just like mad lakes. And then Canada is on the other side of Detroit, which my stupid ass didn't bring my passport. And they have casinos over there.
Mm.
So the people I was went to the fucking casino on the other side of, I guess it's like Michigan. They just got mad lakes and shit.
Totally. The song from Journey, Don't Stop Believin', it famously says born and raised in South Detroit, which is apparently not a thing. South Detroit is Canada. It's like it just rhymed. So I don't understand. I also don't understand how Canada, which is to the north of us, would be South Detroit.
Totally.
I really need to go to Detroit and figure all this stuff out.
Why would you get on a train going nowhere?
Yeah.
Anyways, just kidding. Oh, anywhere is the lyric.
And at midnight of all times.
You come for the rap, you stay for the Don't Stop Believing here at the Dead by Rap Pod. I went a little bit more conventional only because I knew you guys weren't going to bring this group from I Slept On. And that would be Slum Village, which is, you know, definitely.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. The Dilla changed my life, but I don't know about Slum Village. Crowd will appreciate that.
Does she have gold still dangling in her ear?
Oh, hey.
That's where it comes from, right? The Fife line?
Slum Village. Yeah. So definitely Slum Village, for me anyway, was my first time really getting into, let's say, a Detroit vibe. Their first proper record that came out, Fantastic Volume 2, really made me start listening to rap again. Like, I was kind of in the wilderness for a while with hip-hop, and this is kind of in the post-Tupac, you know, early Master P era, and legit was, like, done with the fucking...
What were you listening to?
A lot of
indie. That's before rock really came back too. This is like pre-Strokes, right?
Yeah. So this is like old music, weird only indie electronic. I listened to a lot of Stereolab for like years and years.
Not bad at that.
And so I was just kind of like, because at that particular time, the rappity rap shit wasn't fun to me. You know what I mean? It kind of had this real stiffness. This kind of, I don't know. The shit just wasn't moving me anymore. And then you know, a lot of the mainstream rap shit just seems so depressing, and like, you know, the No Limit Tank was busting through everything. So, so when Slum Village came out, so when Slum Village came out, it was a breath of fresh air in the sense that, you know, you have some of J Dilla's best production, but their approach was so fucking fun. Like, lyrically, it's not lyrically sound as a work of rap craftsmanship. T3 and Baten especially, very much coloring outside the lines. The shit was very freestyly, and I've read and heard different things that a lot of that was actually freestyle.
Yeah, I also read that they rapped to a metronome.
And then Jay Dilla would go back and put the beats on.
Build the beat around it.
Yeah, so it definitely has this kind of like, you know, this kind of, this, I don't say this ever, Nate, but this kind of like shuck and jive, like you're kind of when you repeat it, it sounds worse, but but they have this kind of way of getting through verses by mastering timing and in a way that was fresh and original at that time. So a long way to say my song by Slum Village is off their weird Fantastic Volume 1, which is a lot of outtakes, and it's called Yum Yum. SV be the niggas that you can't forget. We get on the mic, good lord, don't we sweat. Every time we make moves like a bassinet. Niggas get on the stage and can't play on shit. Need to put the mic down, let another nigga rap. So it's classic early Slum Village. Dilla has some kind of very quirky loop, and they're just kind of in there having fun. And I remember me and a lot of my friends were really into the record, in part because it sounded like they were having fun. Maybe in similar to the first Far Side record.
Right.
Like, it just seemed like they were having a lot of fun, right, like recording it.
Or like People's Instinctive Travels.
Travels, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not so tight lyrically, but kind of they were just in there vibing out and doing different stuff. So, so that's one of my Detroit slept-ons. I'll come back to my Kid Rock joint in a minute. Nate, what's your second joint?
So this is a dude who I came to know because on his project this year, his name is Denmark Vesey, and he worked with Earl Sweatshirt on this EP. So I was listening to a bunch of his stuff today, and the track that I would like to feature is called Project Prog Rock. Here it is. The griffin on my wrist, go get the odd and new. But it's scoop, soup to shore, ebony magic. The pitch black witch crab poop. Now bring it back, like it's new, brand new. So, just kind of a rappity rap song from his earlier catalog. But as I said, I got put onto him because he did a project with Earl and Knowledge earlier this year. So it's kind of like his newer stuff is kind of like art rap kind of thing. And he in his first group, he was in a group with Quelle Chris. So that ilk. And he has a feature on Chris and Jean Grey's album. I still don't know what to make of it. Everything's Fine, which is one of the more challenging listens of the year.
Yeah, okay, that's a great word. Yeah.
It's like, I'm sure this is good.
Yeah.
I've listened to it three or four times.
It's not bad. It's certainly creative. I think it deserves a revisit. You know,
5-6 years from now.
Yeah, I think it really speaks to our fucked up moment. And so that's, who wants to listen to that? Right. You know what I mean? It's more like you want to like do escapism.
Exactly.
Or get really into the
The nitty gritty of it. It's like this weird satire. I think we've talked about this on the pod before, but I always feel like I'm listening to it like through a pane of glass. Mm-hmm. Like there's something stopping me from emotionally connecting with it.
It reminds me of the Eric Andre Show.
Yes. Very much so.
To where I'm kind of like, this is rap anti-humor.
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm really like,
right.
This is super smart, but I'm not enjoying it. Right.
It's making me uncomfortable. Yeah, totally. But that's a great way of putting it.
But then it means it's effective, right?
Yeah, I think
so. Some people really swear by that record, and I really want us to have Quell and Jane Grant. 100%.
I would love to have them on the show.
So play them only what we said nice about them.
Guys, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show.
Oh,
they're probably not listening, but that's okay. I think... I don't know if it sounds Detroit or not. You know what I mean? I keep thinking I'm liking these rappers who are not doing the thing you're talking about of like finding these interesting rhythms and stuff. And maybe that just is not my style of rap.
I think we've established that. I think we're pretty clear on that
Let's go back in and talk about it more.
Yeah. Oh, man. But all right, Dave, what's your second joint?
I'm picking a dude who goes by Black Milk. I mean, definitely a big-time Detroit person. I actually spoke to him for Wax Poetics and found him to be one of the nicest dudes ever.
Really?
Was talking about his first show, brought his parents there. You know what I mean? Nice. Like, that type of dude.
I can get behind that.
Totally. And, you know, we mentioned it earlier. I do like the project he did with Danny Brown. It's sort of dark, and this was before Danny Brown's... started pinching his nose, and for every vocals, it's weird. I mean, like he actually has a lower register for his voice for those projects. It's weird.
Okay.
He's not bouncing off the walls. The track I want to talk about is Sunday's Best / Monday's Worst. A.M. Rise in the A.M. Early morning lay in. I just want to stay in. I just want to lay in. Pops like, get your ass up. Stop the faking. We already laking. Sunday morning waking, faking like. It's from 2013, Black Milk. And it's a song that it's a pretty personal track. It talks about his religious upbringing and sort of the doubts that emerge as you grow and read and live life about, you know, and sort of doubt your religious upbringing.
Does Black Milk produce as well as rap?
Yeah, he's actually more of a producer than a rapper.
I think that's what I thought.
You thought when you were talking to Elzai?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I confused them.
Got it.
Elzai, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
No, he's actually like Black Milk's early albums, like he's standing there with an NPC.
Okay.
You know that.
Yeah, that's definitely. Yeah. So yeah.
And kind of a musician too, no?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think he studied the drums and stuff. And later on, he started rapping.
Interesting.
And then he worked with Jack White, no?
I'm not sure. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. In the full Detroit kind of.
Whoa, that's really interesting.
Fascinating.
I love the song though. Hard drum programming, really concise raps. Nice. And you know, I need to deep dive more into his stuff.
Yeah.
But
a little underrated, maybe.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, Detroit seems to love him. When like online, I mean, he seems like a regional hero. But yeah,
he was on Fat Beats when I was the buyer at the record store, so we would have all of his stuff the time, and it always came with like posters. Like he was like clearly one of Fat Beats' bigger artists.
Then, so
he definitely has a following.
Totally, literally the nicest dude though. So
that's cool.
Big ups to him.
Hope we get him on the program.
What about you, man?
Yeah, I think we can.
Just more Slum Village, just all day. it's fantastic.
Nice. Yum Village.
Yeah. So this next track that I selected is kind of similar to the first one. It's off the same project, Fantastic Volume 1, and it's called World Full of Sadness. Girl, you know, every time I see you want to serve me, I ask you for a goddamn time, you play me serving. Now every time I see you at Blast Master Dirty, you turn around your ass with dash like a derby. It seems the curtains is closed, the show's over. So, once again, we have a Dilla quirky loop and almost more of an extended chorus. Mm. Like, it doesn't... they barely get into like rapping. But the timing's impeccable, the feel is different, and it's this interesting mix of boom bap, but like with an R&B twist. I think that's one of the things that Slum Village brought to the game, was there was a certain it was rappity, but also had this weird R&B tinge, which we hadn't heard before.
With a hip-hop peel feel to it?
Not exactly.
Appeal to it. What is their saying? BBD's saying R&B on the
smoothed out on
tip.
The R&B tip,
yes,
with the hip-hop
feel appeal to it.
Maybe not smoothed out, maybe smoothed up,
rugged. I know a couple of people who went on the same trip to Detroit as you did, and they all came back kind of like wishing our city would go bankrupt so people could do
Detroit.
Whatever they wanted,
right?
It's like there's this really interesting like creativeness that comes out of essentially the failure of the city government of Detroit. Yep. And it people were really excited when they came back.
It's super, super fun, super creative town, and like Mad Max. So if you go to the Motown, you know, the Motown
Hitsfield.
House,
right,
where
right.
they did, you know, so I went there, and the surrounding neighborhood is just abandoned houses.
Crazy. Yeah.
Just it's so weird. It's like surreal.
Is it the one house that's standing kind of vibe?
Pretty much in that neighborhood.
Wow.
So
that's what they said in the Bourdain episode where they went to Detroit. It's just like empty
buildings.
Desolate,
but it's such
everywhere.
A dope.
And dogs too. Dogs.
Hella dogs.
Taking over
stray
like
dogs.
Neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Scary.
No, it's straight Mad Max on, but then on other blocks, you know, it's very developed, and so it's interesting mix, but they're very much that Detroit versus everybody shit.
Sure. Like,
they're definitely on that.
They're in the trenches,
and,
man.
It's interesting to see because it's a city that I think probably doesn't necessarily get its due given how much they've given to the game, even if you go back to Motown. Right?
Well, that's
right.
I'm glad you brought up Motown. You kind of can't talk about Detroit without talking about 100%. It. It's kind of weird that it's not like Detroit Soul. You know what I mean?
Right,
it could have
right,
helped,
right.
like, brand a little better. Right. Like, people will tell you they love Motown and they don't know any artists from Detroit.
Right.
Like, Motown is such a strong brand and is such a strong sound that people literally don't know.
Well, but then Barry Gordy,
about it.
Barry Gordy also took it to L.A. at a point. So he he kind of, you know, elevated it out of that.
He was burning bridges along the way, so, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Other fun fact, LMFAO, Barry Gordy's kids? Or his son?
Yeah, one of them is one of the sons.
Yeah, Party Rockin' in the House Tonight.
It's actually like the light-skinned dude with the afro, right?
Yeah.
Is his son?
Yeah, that's his son.
Barf.
Not grandson?
No.
So is that dude surprisingly old, or is Barry Gordy have kids like way late into life? The timing's not measuring
up. You can shoot your
there.
Shot pretty late, bro. I'm going to tell you.
And the LMFAO guy, I mean, he could be like a white dude who's like 50.
Yeah. He always has weird sunglasses on. You're looking at like the weird sweatpants and like the accoutrement, not at his like crow's feet, I guess.
Dude, I'd kill for those royalty checks. Right?
Are they still around?
I have no idea.
I don't think that's a thing anymore.
Yeah, but, you know, because that's where our Detroit episode kind of has to.
That's where
the
we
natural
get to.
Arc of it is to go from Motown to
LMFAO.
MLF, MLS. All right. So, yeah, definitely Detroit's legacy, maybe not fully understood. Maybe the shadow of Marshall Mathers kind of fucks things
large.
Up. Where you're not really checking for it in the way you might if it was.
I think if Eminem made 10 albums that sound like Infinite, I would love him and it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, that's the kind of stuff I can get down with.
Yeah.
It's like, the, like, I don't know, crazy, like, attention seeking, like, gimmick shit where it starts to lose.
You
me.
Don't like Bizarre's shower cap? Is that what you're trying to tell me? Is that what you mean to say?
I did not get that at all. Again, working at the record store, it's just like D12 bargain bin. Like you guys have the weed carrier, like get out of jail free card, and you can't stay out of the bargain bin. Like,
totally.
There's like nine of you and you can't find one guy who can
there's
get,
that
get
weird,
a hit.
Weird song on Eminem's new record where he talks about kind of his guilt and lack of guilt about the fact that they didn't do shit.
Right.
Yeah.
He tried, right?
Yeah.
He did everything
like
he could.
Guys. But it's kind of fucked up because, Proof dying. Proof was actually decent. Like, he was a good rapper. The rest of them were kind of marginal, they were like, this is our gimmick. But now I'll say this about D12. I think D12 is definitely an inspiration for Odd Future. Like, when I first saw Odd Future, I said, oh, okay, they've picked up that mantle and I think did something way more creative and fun with it.
Interesting.
Mm. But that kind of thing, but that's a part of Detroit. And that's why I love.
So is Jasper the shower cap guy? Eminem is Earl.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Or Tyler.
No, I was about to say, is he Tyler or is he Earl?
Yeah. In rapping, he's Earl.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
In leadership, he's probably Tyler, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I have no idea. I also don't know any more members of D12. So about as far as
Sleepy,
I'm gonna be able to
Dopey.
This.
That's hilarious.
Papa Smurf. but there's just so many strands. So there's like the dirtbag kind of scene from Detroit, which Danny Brown is kind of a part of that legacy.
Yeah.
It's like over the top kind of dirt baggy rap. And then you have, like I said, the kind of more smoothed out J Dilla side of things. And then you kind of have this kind of straight ahead battle rappy scene. So just a rich city for music. There's also a cat coming out of there right now called named T Grizzly, who I enjoy. Kind of Bay influence. There's a Detroit Oakland synergy for sure. I think Tracks a Million Times.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on there. And yeah, I think if you don't know, you should dig a little bit into the D and hopefully. Ooh.
Oh, ayo. Ayo. Welcome to After Hours.
call Easy Mo B.
Damn.
Welcome to the D, ladies.
Yeah. Yep. So not too much farther I could go from that. But yeah. The Detroit. Don't
Detroit.
Sleep. Dad Bod Rap Pod.
Detroit Rap City.
Just about got the city under control now.